The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Folks, welcome in Sunday night, February 8th. 2 hours of Sports Talk here at WGBB. Sports Talk 1240 is the name of your show. I'm Derek Wasiak. My nutty partner, John Sweeney's off tonight, the big Islander fan that he is.
He's celebrating a win.
And we got two guys filling in for him. John Panarese is with me.
How you guys
and
doing?
Gary Harding.
How
two
are you?
Big Islander fans to fill in for one nut job Islander fan. And the Islanders still haven't lost more than three games in a row. They're still in first place. Still dreams of a division title. Dreams of winning playoff rounds. Maybe even a Stanley Cup. And Islander Nation is saying to themselves, we can do this. Give us a chance. And the nickname I have given John Sweeney and Gary Harding to a lesser extent. So the nickname I gave them is one of Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, shoot.
So to celebrate their enthusiasm and them being the cheerleaders and leaders of Islander Nation, here is your song.
Give us any chance, we'll take it.
And as the song plays, it as I have to live through all these texts I get on a game by game basis,
see, I'm glad
and
I
all the posts
this
on Twitter, it's only fitting that I play this song tonight. I actually, my partner told me that he was sick and he couldn't make it in. However, I don't know if I really believe that. Can we turn that up? That was it? That's all I got?
That's all you got.
It was good enough, though. I think you made your point.
I think everybody got the idea.
Well, John's got the mouth to be more Laverne than I'm me. So
he is Laverne.
He's Laverne.
With a big L, with a big L on his chest. He is Laverne.
That's
to a lesser extent, you
sure. But maybe he's not L for Laverne. Maybe it's L for something else.
I tell him all the time. I know a lot of people because I, you know, officiated, play hockey all my life and all that. Nobody, I'm sure Islander fans are going crazy. The place is, it's rocking, it's packed. Nobody really bothers me, though, except for my partner. It's amazing. It's amazing. He tries to, you know, drag Gary in with him and, you know, some of the tweets that go out, which is fine. But I don't dish it out, so I just don't want to see it. You know, I understand how good the Islanders are playing.
But, of course, tonight, the Islanders go up 3-0 midway through the second period, and just as I'm leaving the house to head to the station, I get this tweet. 3-0, right. Yes. I literally walk into the car, which is probably a 45-second walk from my house to the car, turn on the ignition, and boom, there goes goal number one.
Wow.
I get 2 minutes out of my neighborhood, and boom, there goes goal number two. I wanted to get out of the car, get on my phone and go to tweet Sweeney, shut the heck up.
Yeah. Well, I put up with that on a day-to-day basis.
Bless you. If you can see on the webcam,
anytime
I'm
the Islanders take the lead, I am just waiting.
Because you know
angst
it's going to come.
What's coming my way
you
next.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the Islanders, they won today 3-2, beating Buffalo on the road. I know you can't hear anything in your headset right now.
Okay.
But they took out Buffalo 3-2. They're still in first place. 34 wins, 18 losses, one overtime loss. 69 points. The Rangers salvaged the point as me and John Panarese were driving in. We heard them tie the game with just over a minute to go on the power play. So the Rangers salvaged the point. They're now 30 wins, 16 losses, 5 overtime losses for 65 points. All right, so but they got a lot of games in hand. They got 3 games in hand on Washington and a couple on the Islanders in Pittsburgh. So they're sitting good. They're ahead of Philly by plenty. So things are looking good. 11 points up on Philly, a number of about maybe even 14 points up on the Devils. So,
I mean, it looks like the way things are going right now, the top eight are pretty much a lock at this point. I mean, Florida and Philadelphia are battling for ninth. Again, that 12-point cushion, if you will, that they've got. I don't think it's just going to be a matter of where's the positioning going to be.
Yeah, Florida's played well for themselves, a good, young, hardworking
team.
But I really don't see them, you know, bumping off Boston, Montreal, Detroit. I mean, who are they going to knock out to get in?
Yeah, exactly.
I know Boston's even further behind those teams, but are they really going to catch Boston?
No, I doubt it.
You know, I just don't see that happening. Boston has
Mason got hurt.
They're pretty much a lock in terms of being there year after year in the playoffs.
Mason was dragged out of the game in the second
with
period.
The knee injury again, so that could really bode badly for Philadelphia. They have to rely on memory.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about the current teams, you know, coming up later on. for those who are tuning in tonight, the number 631-888-8811. You want to call after the interview? Be more than my guest. Talk Ranger hockey, Islander hockey, anytime. The guest tonight will be a member from the Roger Nielsen era, the Rangers of the early 90s. And Troy Millett is going to be our special guest tonight. He is now a firefighter up in Canada. So possibly a case of a man who lived two of his dreams in life. We will find out shortly. So do we have the interview hooked up yet? Okay, listen. It's a pleasure to welcome the all-time penalty minute for one season as a Ranger. The only Ranger to ever put up 300 or more penalty minutes in a season. And as a teenager into hitting the young age of 20, certainly before the age of 21, the most penalty minutes. And the only player I can find in NHL history that as a teenager had 300 or more penalty minutes and a double-double, double digits in goals and assists. Yeah. Ultimate power forward early in his career. First impressions mean a lot. I was a big fan of his because he's a year younger than me, and I was playing lousy Division III college hockey, and here's a guy coming out on the garden ice, throwing the body relentlessly on the forecheck, and it was a great 2 years with the Rangers. Troy Millett, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. I'm here with John Panarese and Gary Harding. I'm Derek, and it is an honor when my producer told me that he could possibly get a hold of you for an interview. I'm like, absolutely. Troy Millett, when that guy came to the Rangers, I mean, a lot of goal scorers come up in this league, and you get some young brawlers, but I never saw a guy in his teenage years come to the Rangers. What was that like for you coming in at such a young age and going into Rangers training camp?
Well, it was a big deal coming from a small town of about 2,000 to the big city, that's for sure. It was an adjustment. There's no two ways about it. It was a culture shock for the first 3 months, but, going to any kind of an NHL team, you had to prove yourself. And fortunately, I had an opportunity. I didn't think I was going to be a physical player my first year, but that's something that the Rangers needed. And opportunities don't come your way all that much. So you got to take advantage when it's there.
All right. So you got hurt at a young age, age 27. You wound up retiring. You had a back injury. Is that true?
Yeah, I blew a disc in my neck in Tampa Bay, my first three games there, and that pretty much a career ender. The doctor said I had to get the surgery done or do the rehab, but basically that was the end of my hockey career. And I chose for the rehab, and I went at it pretty hard for 2 years.
Okay.
I got myself back in tip-top shape to be a firefighter, so here I am with a second profession underway.
All right, so and as a second career, a young man becomes a firefighter after serving in the NHL for a number of years. Is this the case of a gentleman who lived two of his dreams in life?
Yeah, I guess you can say that. There was a little delay getting into the firefighter. I kind of dragged my feet for 6 or 7 years trying to figure what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Okay.
you wanted to be a hockey player for forever. So after right. that, it was hard to figure out what I wanted to be in my next stage of life. But the cards fell, and I'm in my 10th year right now as a firefighter, and it's a profession that I'm proud of, and it's a team aspect, right? Much like hockey.
Definitely.
Yeah, now listen, that is the ultimate, and you're a firefighter in Sudbury. That's where you were born. Same month as me, February 25th, 1970, born in Sudbury, Ontario. Growing up as a youngster, who got you started with hockey?
Believe it or not, my grandmother was bringing me to figure skating when I was like 3-4 years old to get me out of the house, and that's where the hockey started, was my grandmother bringing me to the rink.
All right, and as a young guy, when you were growing up, aside from ice hockey, did you play anything else like lacrosse or any other sports?
I love playing fastball. We didn't have any hardball up north here, so it was, I guess you would call it slow pitch or the windmill motion. We
fast
call it
pitch.
Fastball.
Fast pitch softball, yeah.
Yeah, if I had a choice, if I could pick a career, I really love the game of baseball. I just never had the opportunity to play it up north.
Okay, is there a team that you root for in the States in Major League Baseball? Is there a team you followed as a young guy and continue with?
Always the Yankees. As soon as my first couple months in New York, I started following the Yankees, and I've been a diehard ever since.
All right, you got a favorite player we should know about? Who's your favorite all-time Yankee?
Well, you got to stick with Jeter, right? I like the guys that perform over the years, year in and year out, and I guess he's one of my favorites, and I got to jump on board with Baltimore and go with Cal Ripken Jr. too. He's another favorite of mine.
There you go. All right. That's my all-time favorite. So you're all right in my book, Troy, no matter what.
You just made this guy's day. Now, he's a big-time Islander fan, Gary Harding, across from me, but he is a big Baltimore Orioles fan.
That's it.
And Cal Ripken is his favorite, and he's got a smile ear to ear right now with you saying that. That's great.
Well, let's change in gears. And going back to when you said you're 19 and 20, playing for the New York Rangers, again, being that Derek is wearing his Ranger tracksuit here, and I got my Islander sweatshirt on. I mean, just talk about the rivalry. You know, again, as a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid, you know, hearing the crowds at the Coliseum at the Garden for an Islander Ranger game. I mean, it had to be something you never thought you'd experience, let alone be a part of.
I got to tell you, I was so naive back then that I didn't really take it in the way I should have. I just went out and played hard. But after my first year, I really started to respect how the Islanders and the Rangers really went at it with each other. Ironically enough, I researched your show there, and I listened to Mick Vokoda there. So I started laughing a bit because I ended up playing with him a little bit in Tampa Bay, and you know he's a pretty good guy. I only got to know him for a short time, but you know, from being a teammate of his and playing against him, you know, the rivalry between the Rangers and Islanders, I don't think there's anything close to that in the league.
I would say Boston and Montreal are probably the closest. But, yeah, I mean, again, you saw probably just as many fights in the stands as you saw when you were taking on Kenny Baumgartner and Mick Vokoda and those guys, too.
Yeah, that was crazy times back then. The game's changed a lot since then.
Yeah, well, you know what? When you came to the Rangers, it was the first year also for Neil Smith as a GM and Roger Nielsen as a head coach. Why don't you give us a little opinion on how it was being around Roger Nielsen? How was that dealing with him when you first got to camp?
Well, you know, the big thing in being able to play good is having confidence in your abilities, and that's one thing that Roger put in everybody. You know, he was a guy that you wanted to play for, but if you made a mistake, he made you feel that you could fix it on your next shift. And I've had a lot of coaches through my hockey career, and I got to say, out of them all, he was by far the one I wanted to play for the most. And I guess a close second would be Teddy Nolan when I had him in Sault Ste. Marie.
I was just going to ask about the Sioux. Did you play your whole career in the Sioux under Teddy Nolan?
Well, Teddy came in my third year, so I played 2 years under Don Boyd, and then Teddy Nolan came in my third year, and then he gave me the confidence in the playing time, and I made the jump my last year as junior to the Rangers.
Right, so you, after your second year in juniors, you got drafted in the second round, first pick in the second round by the Rangers, 22nd overall. So you go back to the Greyhounds for your third season, where you had a big jump in production, goals and assists. Tell us what that was like, the confidence you got after the draft and just going into that last season there.
Well, the big thing was going to training camp, but you know, I was only there 5 days my first go-around with the Rangers. But the end of my second year, I got called up for the playoffs, that was the third year, and the Rangers were playing Pittsburgh. They ended up getting beat 4 straight.
Right.
But just the experience of being around the guys and seeing the whole atmosphere of NHL life, the playoff hockey, that gave me the confidence coming into camp the following year. And I think that's where it started, was just being around the guys and getting that comfort level.
Right. Any other guys on the Greyhounds that turned pro? Anybody, like, who's the, like, any top-level players that you played with?
Yeah. Well, I played with Bobby Bugner, who coaches the Windsor Spitfires now.
Okay.
And Adam Foote.
Oh, Adam Foote.
Adam Foote, yep. I'm just seeing the lineup, yep.
You have any good stories you want to share from your junior days?
Well,
anything right out of young blood?
What I could come up with, but one of the funny ones that I came up with was after my third year of junior, we got beat out and we didn't make the playoffs in the Sioux, so both six of us went down to Fort Lauderdale for a week of fun in the sun.
Okay.
And came back after a week's holidays, and I was sitting on the couch recovering, and phone rang, and I got a call from the Rangers, said, "We want you up for the playoffs." Ironically enough, I show up in Pittsburgh about 15 pounds overweight,
right,
you know, winded, and playing, you know, trying to get out there with the Black Aces, trying to prove that I belong there.
And 4 shades darker than everybody else, too, right?
The first practice was awful, and I remember Cashman coming up to me and saying, "Kid, you know, this is a chance that you don't want to screw up. You know, you got to give it all you got." And I said, "Man, I'm giving her all I got."
And you tell him, "Coach, I was just at spring break down in Fort Lauderdale. What's going on, man?"
I went to camp the next year with a guilty conscience, so I was ready to go right from the drop of the puck.
Right, so before we get to your first year with the Rangers, let's just go back a little bit. Now, growing up, I like to profile guys because it's very rare that we get a guy like you on for an interview. So You touched on being a Yankee fan, but as a kid growing up in Ontario, were you a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, or was there somebody else you rooted for?
Well, I was on the Edmonton Oilers bandwagon when they were winning all those cups.
There you go.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That would make sense.
And who was your favorite player there? Anybody, like any idols you looked up to?
Well, you know, the one idol that I had, he played for the LA Kings. His name's Dave Taylor. He's from my hometown.
Okay,
Dave
Taylor.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. When you got a small town like that and you get a couple guys making pro, there was another guy named Dave Hannon. But Dave Taylor, by far, I give him a lot of respect because at a young age he pulled me aside and he kind of, just the fact that he was talking to me, he was in the NHL when I was 13 or 14,
right,
meant a big deal. And, of course, you know, my mom worked with his sister. My dad worked with his brother. When you're from a small town like that, everybody knows everybody.
Right.
But, I've been a big fan of his right from day one, and I still am.
And he's an all-time L.A. King. He's part of that Triple Crown line, right?
With
Charlie Sumner and Marcel Dion.
Yep.
So, yep, Triple Crown line.
And they wore the old Laker colors back then, the purple and gold. So you're probably rooting for them, too, since he was from your hometown, along with the Oilers, who were racking up the Stanley Cups. Okay, so you grew up, and you're a big Oilers fan. Now, like I said, you know, a lot of times we notice the young guys come in, the Crosbys, the teenagers, they're putting up points. Very rare for a young guy to come into the league. And not just with the fighting, but I always remembered you more for throwing the body relentlessly on the forecheck. So you get to the Rangers for the 89-90 season, and you get to training camp, and you're in there with guys like Chris Nyland, okay, and some of the other Ranger tough guys that were there. What was that like, and how was training camp? Did you have any tussles in training camp with guys like Chris Nyland or some of the other guys?
No, not at all. I from what I was told and from what I remember, I went into camp, and as camp got going, I got stronger. And when we got into the exhibition games, when you weren't playing against a possible teammate, that's when, you know, you didn't hold anything back, right? You're trying to prove everything.
Right. Because you were in there with Chris King and Mark Jansons and Randy Mola. There weren't any tussles like in the training camp games that were going on back then?
No, not that I can recall.
All right.
Not against any of the big names anyways.
All right, well, some of those guys, and I know Chris Nyland was banged up a lot. He missed a lot of playing time. If you ever get a chance, we had him on the show one time, and I had spoken to him about being part of the Rangers in the playoffs. How was it, you know, in terms of your teammates, were there any guys that you were closer to, like were your buddies with Chris King, or were there other guys, Mark Jansons was another young guy at the time, anybody you were close with?
Yeah, I connected pretty good with Mark Jansons. Darren Turcotte, Mike Richter, Brian Leach. There's about five or six of us all in our early, well, I was 19, but a bunch of them in their early 20s. The Rangers in 89 were a pretty close-knit group. Even the older guys on the team, we all got along quite well. And,
right.
That's why the team did fairly well during the regular season. We played as a team. You know, we had a couple good stars, but for the most part, we played a good team game, and that's, you know, Roger Nielsen's hockey, right? Team play.
Yeah, you know what? He came in, he changed the culture. The Rangers hadn't won a division title since 1942. They've only won a handful in their existence, but 1990 was the first time they had won in almost 50 years. So what was it like being part of a team like that? And also, coming into that first round against the Islanders, they had lost to the Islanders four straight years in the playoffs back in the early 80s, and five out of the first six times they met them. From 75 to 1984, they faced the Islanders. That's where the heat of the rivalry got going. Faced them six times in a 10-year period, losing five out of six. All right? So now you're a part of the team that knocks them off in 1990. So what was it like going through that season and finishing in first and just the whole culture that was being created by Roger?
Well, it was just fun to be on the team, that's for sure. Playing against the Islanders in the playoffs, it was a battle, you know, but we finished still, you know, quite a bit higher than them.
Right.
But we didn't take them for granted. You know, you just explained why it was such a big deal for the Rangers to win that year. But there was nothing given, even as a team that should have won that, and we did. It was a tough series. And I was just looking back, it was a physical series, too.
And any notable fights from your rookie there that stand out in your mind? Anybody that you looked forward to going at it with? Like any nemesis that you created in those first couple of years with the Rangers?
I'm going to be honest with you. You know, when you play the game hard and you finish your checks,
right,
and you're not a heavyweight,
right,
everybody wants a piece of you. So what it boiled down to is not really picking fights, but just playing hard and sticking up for yourself. And that's it. Basically how I ended up with so many penalty minutes. I never went looking for a fight, per se, as far as having an opportunity to play the game hard, finish
right,
your check, and the physical play just kind of followed me. Right.
Well, I just happened to be looking up on hockeyfights.com, and I noticed counting all this up, especially in the first 2 years, 38 fights in the regular season, only two in the postseason. Those were two against, I think it was Alan May and Scott Stevens in the Capital Series that second year. So you were definitely a pretty person that liked to get involved in the rough stuff.
I think guys wanted to fight me more than I wanted to fight them.
Troy, I actually, you know, like I said, I was a big fan of you. The same age as me when you played for the Rangers, but I was a big fan right from the get-go, first impression. I always remembered you relentless and throwing the body left and right. You just happened to be, as a rookie, you set a team record for penalty minutes. This was like the height of the fighting era in the NHL, these early part of the 90s. Now, listen, in terms of fighting on the Rangers, two of my favorite guys were Nick Fatiu, was an all-time Rangers tough guy, mm-hmm. and Ty Domi. So I might not have looked at you in that regard. Those guys were constantly fighting, but you're not only the only guy with 300 penalty minutes, you're the only guy to put up 250 or more penalty minutes back-to-back years with the Rangers, no less the only guy to do it twice. Anyway. Yeah. And for your age, I couldn't find anybody in the history to put up that many penalty minutes before the age of 21. So take it for what it's worth. Both years you scored 13 and 12 goals your first 2 years. You had double-digit assist totals. I was looking at you as a big fan of yours as becoming a power forward, sort of like in the mold of like a Rick Tocchet, because Rick Tocchet started out the same way as you, throwing the body. He had to take on whatever fights. He might have been looking for it a little more than you, but he didn't score a lot till later on in his career. Now, the Rangers, obviously, they signed Adam Graves as a restricted free agent, and then you were awarded to Edmonton as compensation. Now, I was not happy about that. I knew about Graves being on the kid line when the Oilers won the 90s Stanley Cup. I liked him. When we got him, I was happy about that. When they turned around and awarded you, I wasn't happy. My father wasn't happy. To this day, I was a cop for a long time. My neighbor next door is a cop. When I told him I was going to be interviewing, he was like, I love Troy Millett. I hated when they awarded him to Edmonton. So most Ranger fans, they have to be honest about that. Nobody could have been happy about you being awarded. Ironically enough, Graves was also first pick in the second round, 22nd overall, 2 years before you, for whatever that's worth. That was just ironic when I looked, you know, to compare the both of you. You had better numbers when the deal was made, when they acquired him. So you went to the team that you rooted for as a kid, but were you happy about leaving, or you were upset about that?
Oh, I was devastated. I was leaving a team that I loved. I had a lot of good friends.
Right.
But looking on the bright side, and I don't want to step on toes here. I got to watch what I say. But on the right side, I was going to Edmonton, you know, and joining a team that I cheered for as a kid. And all I was looking for was getting a chance and going in there and making the best out of it. You know, I was disappointed. I can't even describe how disappointed I was that I left. But I was going to make the most of it. There's no two ways about it. You get a chance to play in the NHL, you're going to play wherever.
Right.
Ironically enough, GM that's in New York now was the GM in Edmonton, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I really don't think he had plans for me right from the day one, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for that season for me.
Right, because you ended up then, you know, I'm looking at the thing on January 12th, you got sent to the New Jersey Devils for David Mailey, so you know, you get to your hometown team or your favorite team, and then 3 months later you're packing your bags again and going back onto the East Coast.
Yeah, it was a crazy year, that's for sure. There's no doubt about it. It was a frustrating year in Edmonton, I'll tell you. I wish I was a little bit more mature back then. I would have probably handled a little bit better. But
right. Being
21 and figuring that, you know, I should be playing, I don't understand why they're not giving me a chance. I'm not going to say I pouted, but I'm going to tell you that I was very upset with not getting an opportunity for no real reason. But having said that, you know, I didn't take advantage of my time when I got to Jersey.
Now, looking at your career, though, Troy, you didn't spend a lot of time in the minor leagues. So did injuries set in those early 20s? Like, did you have other injuries that led to missing a lot of time, or what was the case in there?
No, I was just scratched in Edmonton. You know, out of the first half of the year, I played 15 games, and I can remember out of the 15 games, I might have played two or three where I had more than three or four shifts a game.
Right.
Wow.
Mm.
But as far as the injury front went, I got hurt in Boston somewhat, and I battled through it, and I thought it was good to go. And then in Tampa Bay, it just got the best of me. But I was very fortunate as far as injuries go, other than getting your typical stitches and the odd bump and bruise and sore hand.
Right.
I was very fortunate.
Speaking of Boston, got a real serious question to ask you about something. Do you get a Christmas card from Murray Barron every year?
No Christmas card.
For those who don't know, if you actually go onto YouTube, and I happened to find it when I was doing some research, and there was a certain game against the Montreal Canadiens where Murray Barron all of a sudden basically got a one-shot from you, and down to the ground he went. And that webpage has about like over 50,000 hits, by the way. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I was about an inch away from getting one back. So it was just a matter of about an inch there. I would have been on the ground with him, I think.
Well, you know what, Troy? The Boston-Montreal rivalry is so fierce. They've faced each other in the playoffs more than any teams in the NHL. That no matter what, a Boston fan's going to remember you fondly just for dropping a guy in the red sweater. So was that your most memorable fight, or do you have a memorable fight that you were proud of or happy with the result that's better than that?
Oh, that's been, I guess that's the most one-sided one I ever went in.
Right. Can you give us a story of one?
I used to battle with Brad May all the time when I was in Ottawa and throughout my career. And I ended up becoming friends. I golfed in his golf tournament a few times, but I bet you I had four or five good tussles where one time I ended up on my ass, another time he ended up with a good shot.
Right.
But I remember the battles that I've had with him and Brad May and Rob Ray. I guess Buffalo, when they were – Ottawa and Buffalo was very similar, I guess, to New York and New Island and the Islanders, but not to the extent.
Strangely enough, Brad May is the only guy to put up more penalty minutes in his first full season than you. He had 309 penalty minutes. It might have been a year after you came in. 309, and he did it as a 20-year-old. That's why I know you were the youngest. I couldn't find anybody younger than you. But right now that you mentioned his name, that was what I had recognized when I was doing a little research on this. So your career going forward after the rings, like I said, I thought you had an excellent start. I thought the progress was great to building into a power forward. What do you think, I mean, aside from the injury that ended your career, but the next 5 or 6 years, what do you think caused you not to make the progress that you wanted to make going forward?
Confidence that was taken away from me when I went to Edmonton. I was never able to get it back. I never had a guy like Roger Nielsen give me that green light to go play the way I had to play and give me that confidence. You make a mistake and then you make up for it in the rest of the game. I never had that opportunity again. I had a bit of a chance like in Ottawa. You know, unfortunately, it was in a team that was just building, right? They were in their second year when I went there for 3 years.
Right.
So it was tough playing on a team that was just getting into the league type of thing.
Now, was that Rick Bonus who was your coach then at that time?
Yes, Rick Bonus. And you know what? I got to admit, he was a really good guy and a good coach as well. I can't say anything bad about Rick Bonus either. And Ale Venu, who's now, you know, obviously on to bigger and better things, right?
Right. Yeah. He's doing a great job with the Rangers right now. Listen, I don't want to end our interview on a note like, you know, the confidence note. So is it okay? We have to take a quick break. Can you stay with us past the break, and then we'll finish up the interview?
Sure thing.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. WGBE, we got to pay the sponsors. We'll be back right after this.
That's it.
Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB. Or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back. 631-888-8811. The number, Troy Millett is with us, former Ranger, 1990 season, 1990-91 season. And Troy, let's just go back to that Ranger Islander series I touched on a while back, and the Rangers had lost a number of battles consecutively with the Islanders in the early 80s, 81, 82, 83, 84. Ranger fans were exhausted with suffering through that.
We weren't,
John. They face them. You finish in first place in 1990. You face the Islanders in the first round. First question I have, the Rangers won game one of that series. Do you remember the incident? James Patrick had laid a big hit on LaFontaine. He got a concussion. And then at the end of the game, Vokoda going after Jeff Blomberg. Do you remember the incident? Do you remember what transpired and how the series went from there?
Yeah, ironically enough, I just watched that video there about an hour before talking to you guys. Oh, yeah, I do remember, and it was pretty ugly.
Was there anything that stood out to you in that particular game, or did you was anything discussed between teammates at a team dinner leading into games two and three, anything like that?
I'm thinking right now. It's been 25 years.
Right, yeah.
Wow.
And what I do remember about that series, I remember making a hit on a defenseman. I think it might have been Norton. And I had to go and get interviewed, and I was maybe going to get suspended for a game, but nothing become of it.
Right.
That was all tied in, and it was just an ugly scene. I'd like to see how many games guys would get present day if something were like to happen like that.
Well, who from that series, you know, looking back, because it's, you know, 25 years, it's interesting because I can remember so much of that so clearly.
Right.
But is there any particular Islander like Kenny? Would Kenny Baumgartner play?
Baumgartner, he was running around. Yeah. Vokoda was running around.
Anybody who sticks out, though, who you know, you might have tangled with?
Well, Baumgartner is the one that ended my career, but didn't happen that series. That happened when I was in Tampa Bay.
Really?
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Didn't know about that.
What happened in that with that situation?
Well, I was in a fight, obviously, and I tried to get up. And when I was lifting my head up, he pushed down, and he just overpowered my neck, and I overpowered my body, and I popped the disc.
Oh, really?
That's another one. Not getting Christmas cards.
Up my arms. Yeah, it was an awful feeling. I wish that on nobody.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Was there anybody on the Islanders like a Gerald Diddick or anyone like that? Gerald Diddick, I remember you fighting him at least once or twice. Anybody that you had anything going with in that series or no?
No, not that I can recall. Like I say, I can't remember too much about that series other than we won 4-1.
Which I was ecstatic about, Troy. I was ecstatic. Yeah, I wasn't happy. You lost it. The only game you lost was in double overtime. I'll never forget because Brent Sutter scored. And the reason I bring this up is because the Islanders have played the Rangers 4 overtime games in the postseason, and the Islanders have won all of them.
4.
So, but that was a big-time series win. Now, going into the next round, you played the Capitals, and that's when I know you tussled with a few guys. But the next round, here's what I remember. You tell me the rest of it. You beat the Capitals 7-3 in game one. I remember because my dad couldn't take me to the game. He took my mom. You blew him out. I'm getting excited because I'm like, okay, here we go. We just knocked off the Islanders. We just won 7-3. We're going to win this series, go to the semifinals. And then the story and the legend of John Drews presents itself.
Oh, yeah.
And the Rangers lose 4 games in a row. So what do you remember about that series, if at all, anything?
Yeah, I do remember Drews lighting it up, that's for sure. He came out of nowhere and started being a goal scorer in the playoffs. And they just wore us down. You know, I remember Hunter being a big part of that team.
Right.
You know, Scott Stevens. They I think the worst thing we could have done was win the first game 7-3. It would have been better if we would have lost or if we would have won 4-3. But
right.
I think we got a little – well, I know myself, I probably got a little bit too cocky and thinking, well, we're going to beat these guys. And being young, not going through this process in the past, but it came back to bite us in the butt, that's for sure.
Emotions get a little bit better in that case.
Yeah, immaturity and emotions. You know, I look back at it now. I wish I had my mind back then in my 19-year-old body. I'd be a superstar.
Youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah.
You know what the tough thing there was, Troy, was losing game four in overtime. I'll never forget that one. Rod Langway scored a goal. I still can't believe he scored to this day. And then, obviously, game five was John Drews in overtime to lose that one. So I thought game four was really the one that that put a real, damper on the series and put you down in a bind 3-1. All right, so now you don't have a great memory of the things that killed me in life because nothing got good until I finally won a Stanley Cup as a Ranger fan. That's okay, though. That's all right. Now, today, if we fast forward, your son plays hockey. Why don't you tell us a little bit about his junior career, where he came up, you know, what got him into hockey and a bit of his progress coming up through juniors.
Well, yeah, he's 18 now. I followed him, obviously. Not watching a lot of games on TV for the last 10 years. I've been following my son around the rink. But 3 years ago, I coached his minor midget team. I got 4 or 5 kids drafted in the OHL, and he was one of them. And I give the kid credit. You know, he's all heart. I'm proud to say he works a lot like I did when I played pro. He's on his way. I'm not sure where it's going to take him, but I give him credit. He's in Ottawa right now, playing for the Ottawa 67s in his third year. And since he got traded there from the Sioux Greyhounds, the team's 6 or 7 games over 500, and I think before he got there, they were 5 or 6 games under 500.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's been a nice progression. I know the Sioux's having a very good season so far. Now, he's 18, am I correct on that?
Yeah, last year would have been his pro draft year, but I'm trying to get it in his head. He wants to be a free agent at 20 years old and have a really big year as last year junior so he could pick the team he wants to go to.
You know, listen,
see how that plays out.
There's nothing wrong with that approach at all.
No, it's not. A lot of kids have done it. I mean, it's definitely possible. They just, for whatever reason, don't get looked at in their draft year. And then all of a sudden at 19, when they get to that overage level, they just start playing their butt off. And that's... Again, if he's got the same heart as you, Troy, he's got to have no problem.
He's got the same heart and he's got a better work ethic, so I think he's got a little bit more than what I had. That's for sure.
All right. So now, growing up, since you rooted for what happened now with your son growing up becoming a hockey fan? Who does he root for? Who did he root for growing up?
Well, that's a question you'd have to ask him.
Oh, you guys don't follow a team together at all?
No. You know what? That's one of his faults. He doesn't watch enough hockey. He loves playing it. He loves competing. He doesn't watch the game enough of it. That's one thing I wish he did more of. You know, you get to learn the game when you watch the game.
Yeah. Did you get him into baseball with the Yankees? What is he following the Yankees at all or no?
No, not a Yankees fan either.
Okay. So Dad doesn't have that tie-in with him at all.
No.
All right. Now
junior hockey and girls, maybe.
Priorities.
Well,
yeah.
That's just fine.
He's 18, so.
All right, so now you've been a fireman for 10 years, you said. How's that been? How's that experience? Is everything you thought or hoped for?
Yeah. It's a job, and it's a profession that when you're coming out of the professional ranks of playing hockey, when somebody says, what are you doing now? I'm just so proud to say that I'm a firefighter than I can say I played in the NHL.
My dad was a New York City firefighter for 30 years, so I have the utmost respect for you, and I'm glad you got to, have that second career, because I know my dad loved it, doing it, and he went out on an injury, oddly enough, 1990, when you were starting to play hockey.
Okay. It's rewarding, right? And you know what? This teamwork, playing hockey, being a fireman, it's all keeping your kids in your straight and narrow, right? And that's...
Yep.
That's what the problem. My kid's in the game of hockey. What he becomes after the game of hockey, hopefully it branches out. And as far as I'm concerned, after being around kids at a young age and coaching them, if you can keep them in the game as long as you can, it just makes them better people and better workers.
And you know, it's interesting, Troy. That, I mean, you know, I know you've become a fireman. I know, you know, following the Islanders for years. I remember, I know that Gary Nyland, who you played with in the Islander Ranger series, also is a fireman in, I believe, in Vancouver. Yeah. And I know he was involved in some big incident where he saved somebody's life. I mean, you know, it's got to be again a very rewarding thing. You know, when you know, you get involved in something like that. And like I said, you know, kudos to you for doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a rewarding job. And you know what? I got good teammates. When you're a team member of in a hockey team and you go to work and you're looking out for each other, and it's inbred in me right now, right? It's, you look out for each other, and I'm just glad that I'm able to go to work and have that same feeling that I did when I went to a rink.
Well, when my father passed away recently, it was amazing how many guys he had worked with over the years who came to the wake and the funeral, you know, that whole team mentality, you know, that you don't forget. And he was out of the job for, you know, 20-something years at that point. So it definitely is a team, you know, team job.
Well, they, you know, they call it a brotherhood in the fire service.
Amen to that.
When I look back at my teammates, and I see guys that I haven't seen in 15 years, and I'll go and see that guy, and it's like I never left him. I talked to him like the week before, like a guy like Dennis Vial. You know, I stood in his wedding. I haven't seen him in. Talked to him on the phone a couple months ago, and it's like I hadn't seen him a week before.
So you still keep in touch with some of the guys that you came up with?
Just a few, but he's one of them. He's special. He's one of my best friends.
He's
a big guy, too, Vial. Him and Louis DeBrus, they're monsters.
Unfortunately, I'm not shaking my head about Dennis Vial when he played with the Ottawa Senators or played with the with the Rangers. I remember Dennis Vial when I went over to England when he played with a team called the Sheffield Steelers. And I'm telling you, I have seen one of the biggest Donnybrooks ever in my life, not watching a hockey game in the States, but watching a game in England that Dennis Vial was a part of. And when you talk to him again, ask him about the stories of the Steelers. I'm telling you, it's gonna give you a biggest rude awakening you ever thought.
Really? Oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'll call him on that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Troy, that's why I was a little amazed when you said nothing went on in training camp. I'm like, well, are you kidding me? Because I remember I worked back then. I had just started officiating, but I did a lot of Islander training camp games. And I remember all the fights breaking out in their training camps. Now, today when I do Rangers training camp games, now it's a totally different game. So nobody, I mean, the coach is like, we don't want him fighting. We don't want him doing this. I'm like, all right, coach, no problem. I'll call a few penalties and we'll be fine. It's just the whole game has changed. That's why your penalty minute records as a Rangers, they're safe. No one's breaking that. Today, if somebody got 300 penalty minutes today, they'd probably be locked up or suspended.
Yeah, they wouldn't be in the NHL.
I think that's going to be good forever, eh, wouldn't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know it's going to be good forever, I'm telling you. It is nothing like it was 20 years ago. And listen, I know it's 25 years ago. I know it's a long time. But listen, you're a year younger than me. Okay, I stay active every day just to feel young. I still walk into the kitchen and I look at my wife and I'm like, man, I came in here for something and I already forgot what it was. So don't worry about forgetting some of the stories that I was trying to drag out of you. But listen, you're a young guy and you should be excited going forward. You got a second career. I am more than proud for you that you are a firefighter. I was a cop for almost 20 years before I got hurt. Both of them, tough jobs and fighting fires. Man, you never know where the danger is coming from in that. So, you know, I want you to stay safe out there and enjoy your time. And I really thank you for joining us tonight.
I'm going to thank you for having me on the show.
No, it was more than my pleasure, and I'll try and have you on sometime soon. But you take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks very much, Troy.
Thanks, Troy.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
All right, folks, Troy Millett.
That was great.
That was
Troy
great. He's a good guy.
You know, and I'm not shocked, though, totally, because it's amazing how much more fans really grasp, you know, the history of their teams and the experiences than maybe some of the players. You know, and he left it. You know, he was only here 2 years and he left. And things go on. A young guy's life, he's 20, 21 years old. I mean, I can't, like I said, I was in college at the time.
And again,
I was going to spring break. You know, he's talking about he went away to Florida before the Rangers called him up for the playoffs in 89. At that time, he was only 18 years old.
Yeah, and again, you know, having his career unfortunately cut short at 27. Right. And then having the ability, as he said, you know, after a couple of years and getting going, to be able to have that second career going. And, you know, that's a great story. You know, you don't hear enough of those things. So.
Yeah, and he was a tough young player. I really did view him as being in the mold of like a Rick Tocchet.
No, there was no question.
20, 30 goal score on a consistent basis and just, you know, the Rangers.
That type
Adam
of a
Graves,
player.
And Adam Graves wanted to be my favorite Ranger of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how funny is that?
Yeah, very ironic.
One day I'm upset that Troy Millett's issued and given to Edmonton is conversation. And then within 10 years, you know, within a few years, Graves winds up being my favorite Ranger of all time.
Mm-hmm. That's sports.
You know? Yeah. So, all right. I wish I could have got more stories, though, you know, about fights and
facilities. It's funny how these guys who fought don't like to really talk about, you know, any of the real, like, animosity. You know, they might kind of allude to it, but I've never heard anybody actually come out and say, oh, I hated this guy's guts.
Yeah, just the way we had when we had the interview with Mick Fakoda, and Troy even mentioned it, you know, that, you know, again, it's the personality. Usually those guys sometimes are a lot more ebullient. I mean, I like the way Troy handles himself. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
he's great.
Yeah, very, very classy.
Yeah.
Very classy. But, and again, that's the way most of the agitators and the fisticuff guys and the heavyweight fighters in the NHL are when you talk to them outside of the game. I mean, it's just a completely different persona.
Yeah, it's true. Now, I asked Chris Nyland about guys he might have been leery of. No, he wasn't. I'm not worried about anybody.
No.
You know? And you ask him who you enjoyed fighting more. They really don't give you names of guys they enjoyed fighting more than others.
No, well, Nyland seemed to be a breed all his own, too. You know?
And Nick Fatio, I say some guys, you can get them to reflect, and they'll bring up big stories. You'll ask them about certain guys, and they'll be like, oh, he wasn't that tough. This is what happened here. Oh, that guy was tough. This is what happened there. But I was a big fan of his. I wish his career went better for him. And I really believe in what he was talking about. I mean, one word answer, matter of factly, what kept you from excelling the way, you know, moving forward in progress? Confidence.
Confidence.
And that's true. Confidence is so big in sports. You know, especially in the violence. It doesn't matter if it's football, hockey, professional boxing, you name it. Confidence is huge, especially in those physical, grueling type sports.
Now, I'm just wondering, Sather, was he coaching in Edmonton in 91?
He was referring to Sather in terms of he was the GM.
GM, right, but was he coaching?
Because Muckler won that.
Oh, Muckler, that's right.
So he might have still been the coach.
He was Muckler, yeah.
Right, okay. But he was referring to more.
I get it. I get that.
GM. But I could figure out who was the coach anyway by clicking on this thing right here. And in 1991, the coach was still John Muckler.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
All right.
Makes sense.
The first year Muckler took over for Sather, they won the Stanley Cup. That was the kid line. Graves and Murphy and Jelena.
They beat Boston.
And then his second year, he was only the head coach for 2 years there, Muckler.
Right.
You know, so second year was when Millett went there, and then he went to the Devils real quickly.
Right. I remember him when he was in the Devils, too.
Yeah.
You know,
I remembered him on Boston. I didn't remember his time at all in Tampa, but it was
short.
No, it was three games.
Yeah,
it was only three games.
So, but, you know, and then you're so into following your team, you don't, like, watch everybody else. So, you know.
Well, there was no game NHL Game Center or XM radio, you know, satellite radio back then.
Right.
Too, so you kind of.
But also, I, you know, even, like, I had gotten to officiating. In his rookie year, me and my dad had season tickets. So we would go into the games. Between the two of us, we didn't miss any home games. And if we weren't there watching on TV and all that. But I started getting into ice hockey officiating while I was finishing up playing hockey in college. Then those next few years, I was officiating a lot and missing a lot of games.
Yeah, sure. Because you.
So it was hard enough just keeping up with the Rangers, you know, because I was trying to go somewhere with officiating. So, you know, and by the time I was done trying to do something with that, you know, his career was coming to an end. But you know what? Now he's a fireman. He's got his kid playing junior hockey, so God bless him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he sounds good. He sounds like he's in good health.
Yeah, I'm sure he spent many years playing that hockey dad, having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and take your kid to a Saturday morning game at 7:30 a.m. or whatever. You know? Again, that's, you know, I'm sure, a Canadian hockey dad, there's nothing better than that.
Yeah. So he's part of a Ranger team that won a division title for the first time in almost 50 years. Then they won the division in 92, 94 when they won the Cup. A few years ago, in 2012, was the last division title they won. They've only won like five or maybe six total in their existence. But right now, your team sits in first place, and the Rangers have a shot between them, Pittsburgh, Washington, and the Islanders. They're all going to fight for first place. But this is shaping in where basketball means absolutely nothing in New York. Hockey can really, you know, captivate the city. Now, I spoke to him, and you guys know as well as me, we're all around the same age. You know, 75 to 84, the Rangers and Islanders met, what was it, six times in 10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and only twice after that, they met in 90. The Rangers won 94. They haven't met in over 20 years.
In the playoffs,
and it's funny how so many younger fans don't have any appreciation or recollection of the rivalry.
They've never experienced the
playoffs. No, they don't. They don't really even know the rivalry. It just kind of goes from, oh, yeah, the Islanders and Rangers hate each other and blah, 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 blah. But they really don't know what the rivalry was. They didn't experience it.
Yeah, I mean, it could be something special this year if they do happen to meet in the playoffs, because it is kind of, it's sort of constructed like the old Patrick division once again. Mm-hmm. Not altogether the same way you play within your division, matter-of-factly, in the first two rounds, but it's at least the chance is there.
Right.
So the probability or the chance of them meeting, at least it's enhanced. And if it does happen, people will get a chance to experience the elevated level of intensity between fan bases leading into and during a series.
Right.
I don't think it'll ever be quite like when we were growing up, because just like free agency started in baseball, it's caught up finally with football. Back then in hockey, I mean, you look at that Islander team that won four Stanley Cups. There's a good, 14, 15 guys that were on all four Cups.
I think it was, I think 14 as they count.
And you just don't have that.
No,
no, you can't.
And even
you
the Rangers had at least a number of guys that were there the whole time during that, you know, rivalry.
Yeah.
Whether you it was Ryan Gresham or a few other guys. So they're not going to have that.
It's very rare that you get a team that builds from within and has it, that sustained for that period of time, because the caps and whatever the the salary situation is.
They're not going to have that where the teams actually hate each other because they keep seeing each other year after year after year, but they'll have the fan.
We got a phone call
there. Experience of that. We got a phone call to Sports Talk 1240. Who's on the line with us?
Hey, Doug, what's going on?
Who's this?
This is Matt.
This is Matt from Islip. What's going on, Matt?
What's going on? They got on the fan, as you very well know. Nice win tonight. They
I can hear the
voice. The storm this week.
I can hear the victory in your voice right there.
your team. The two things that concern me going forward is how much for your team can Talbot step up and cover what you need to cover for the next 3 weeks. And this is more for your partner there, Derek. Who's going to step up and fill the void Derek Bozo leaves for us, possibly for the rest of the season through the playoffs? So this is your serious eye injury that he had.
Well, my partner's sick. I got two Islander fans filling in for him, Gary Harding and John Panarese. My partner's homesick. I actually think he's kind of hiding. You know, because he's like a license. He gets very hot and cold with the Islanders. I mean, the Islanders lose. The Islanders haven't lost more than three in a row the whole season. And as soon as they lose two or that third one, he is like ready. I'm like, come on, give me a break.
I know.
He's been so consistent in their performance.
He starts texting me and starts saying, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I'm like, John, shut up and take a Valium and relax.
Well, they're tough to lose the Boston tonight, but they played a very good game. Tuukka Rask in the last two games against the Islanders has just absolutely stood on his head and shown him to be the world-class goalie that he is.
Right.
So they're not going to take that performance away from them. You know, they did what they were supposed to do tonight. They got a little sloppy to stretch, but they're supposed to be, a lower echelon team like Buffalo, and they did that,
Now, listen, the Islanders are doing a great job. I keep saying it all along. You go back to early in the season, okay? You go back to early in the season, Islanders got off to a good start this year, all right?
Another call coming, too.
Well, we're lining up the calls. Look at this, Matt. You got this whole thing started here.
Way to go, man.
Early in the season, Matt, the Islanders got off to a great start. They had a little dip in performance there. I remember they got shut out by the Avalanche. They lost the game out in San Jose. You know, three in a row. They stopped the bleeding right away. They won an overtime game in Anaheim. They beat the Kings. They put a winning streak together before they even came. And when they got home, they returned the favor to Colorado, shut them out 6-0. Right? Yep. Then you go a little further into the season, into December, and they lost three games in a row again.
St. Louis.
My partner made the mistake of taking me to an Islander St. Louis game.
Yeah.
They lost the next two after that. Lost the next two after that. He thought I put the jinx on Jigs McDonald because they were undefeated with him announcing games. Right? But who'd they stop the losing streak against?
Rangers.
No, the Chicago Blackhawks. They beat the Blackhawks at home. They put a four-game win streak together. I mean, this is what has gone on. Then after they beat the Rangers after the All-Star break, right after the All-Star break, they lost the three in a row, Boston, Detroit, Florida. And listen, they could have lost to Philadelphia. They were losing 2-0.
Yep.
And they stopped the bleeding. That's what's been impressive. I know there's a lot of good young guys, the top scorers with Strome up there, with Tavares,
and
Brock Nelson has slowed down with the goal scoring, but your first-round picks are performing. Yeah, and they're winning games, but you know what? They haven't had any long losing streaks. They're pretty tight as a team. As I recall, I don't follow the Islanders like you guys, but I do recall checking in between the periods with the Rangers, and they were covering the story where they got the farthest traveling with the players, and
right.
I like that.
Yeah, they got a great tradition to do.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. And you know what it is? They're getting contributions from everybody. It's not necessarily relying on that top line or the second line. Again, Philadelphia game, who was the star? Cal Clutterbuck. I mean, who would have thought?
Right.
You know,
you see him on the shootout, you're like, oh, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, well, you know what? He scored. Why not?
bringing Colin McDonald up today, and he makes a great contribution. And right. I think that kind of highlights the great play that you've been getting out of that line with Casey Zizekas as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well,
he would be a solid third line guy on just about any other team.
Don Cherry called that line the best line in fourth line in hockey ever, not just now, ever.
Yeah. I've heard that from a few guys. Very impressive.
Don Cherry really, really, I mean, he was going crazy over Matt Martin the other day. Oh, he goes out and gets his nose broken in two shifts.
However,
he's back out there.
Listen, I must add this much. My partner got sick recently. I think it was after he saw the fight with Matt Martin. I was ref in a high school playoff game. Somebody sent me a quick, like, highlight of this fight, of his nose, like, in slow motion.
Yeah, getting
and
pushed.
All my partners tell me, oh, this guy Martin's beating up this guy, beating up that guy, dating Boomer Esiason's daughter. Oh, is this guy long hair? Thinks he's like the brunette version of Kenny Baumgartner. And I see him get knocked out. That wasn't Dave Schultz. Who the hell was that guy on Philadelphia?
Yeah, was it White?
I think my partner's been sick ever since.
Is it like a typical hockey player, though? Did it stop him at all?
No,
he's a worker.
No, if that was a baseball player, it would have been the DL
he's
for a
worker.
Month.
He's a throwback.
Yeah. And like you said before, Derek, you know what? First time in a long time, basketball in New York is absolutely irrelevant.
I think it's great that it's irrelevant so that hockey can take over and you can watch. I don't recall ever seeing the Rangers and Islanders in a battle to win a division title.
No,
this late in the season? No way. It's no impossible. Way. I don't recall it. Nobody's going to convince me otherwise. Here is a chance for it to happen down to the wire, not only between them two, but you got Pittsburgh and Washington. And Washington's goalie's playing outstanding, and Pittsburgh's got Malkin and Crosby. As an Islander fan, does anybody worry you more than Brock Nelson's lack of goal scoring recently, or is there something else that worries you about the team and that, like their penalty killer?
Nelson, every team's going to struggle through that. A penalty killer definitely concerns. I don't know why they can't solve that problem. But concerns me is who's going to step up and fill that role that Postal
that's
top line.
That's what I feel too.
Can Anders Lee fill that spot? He's looked pretty good so far.
I think he can. Have they really give him the chance? I mean, he showed a great. Great sense on the power play goal that he scored today.
He's
got the size. He's got the.
He's, well.
I'm sorry.
I like that he likes it. He's willing to take the punishment and park himself. In front
exactly.
Of the net.
I mean, if you ever see this guy outside of his uniform, holy cow! I mean, he's sculpted. He's an Adonis. He is. He's huge. You know, he can definitely get in those tight areas, the dirty areas, as Butch Goring likes to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have somebody like that in order to win. And, you know, that's the problem. That's the problem this team has had is they in all through the last couple of years in their power play, they've just not had that guy, that net presence in front. And if Anders can keep doing that, who knows what can happen?
Well, Matt, we got to take a break now, but I want to assure you that you are the big winner because for being the first caller tonight and igniting the line of callers all of a sudden, you are going to receive two tickets to an Islander game against Arizona at the end of the month, and they're not up in the bleed seats. You're going to be sitting down low. So I'll get in touch with you for that. Enjoy the ride. The team's been consistent. Your coach is doing a great job. I'll talk to you soon. Folks, we'll be back with another hour of Sports Talk right after this.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.